Gonna rock these shades. Gonna scream my name. Make you shout now, honey. Gonna make you shout.
Whether you're an independent artist looking to take their career to the next level, or you're a fan that just loves to discover new artists and new original music, Making a Scene has exactly what you're looking for. For the indie artist, we have articles on music business, gear reviews, recording techniques, and interviews with industry professionals. For the fan, we introduce you to new artists every day with our in-depth artist interviews and insightful CD reviews. Nobody gives you more. Making a Scene truly is the number one resource for the indie artist and the fans that love them. Go to makingascene.org and become part of the indie revolution. And now, here's an indie blues double shot from our featured artist today, Jeff Chaz. And stay tuned for that interview. It comes up right after these songs.
Say or do anything you want or want to do. just can't say no to you. You are so sweet. You just knock me off of my feet. Anything you need or want to do, I just can't say no to you. Oh, I can't say no to you. No matter what you say or do, anything you want or want to do, I just can't say no to you. Oh, when we walk downtown, I see the looks of everyone around, digging you from head to toe, thinking I'm such a lucky Joe. Darling, it's true. No matter what you say or do, anything you want or want to do, I just can't say no to you. I can't say no to you. I can't say no to you. Anything you want or want to do, I just can't say no to you. Woo!
And we got Jeff on the line. Hey, Jeff, how you been?
Oh, okay. I'm just kind of escaping the ravages of Hurricane Ida in my beautiful home city of New Orleans right now. I'm up in Nacogdoches, Texas, with a producer friend of mine, Steve Lowry. He produced two of my CDs and a movie that I'm in that is going to be out before too long.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about Jeff Chaz. You know, you've been on the show before, but, you know, we always like to kind of give our fans this opportunity to really get to know who you are by your story. So give us that Jeff Chaz story.
Well, I mean, you want to go back all the way to November 24th, 1950, do you? I mean,
well, we can go back maybe a little less, but yeah, we can go back as far as you want.
Okay. Well, when I was a baby, we lived in a town that got completely destroyed again by, what was that bad hurricane last year, Laura? We lived in Cameron Parish when I was little. In fact, you know the way people talk today about having an icebox, right?
Right.
Well, we did have an icebox.
Okay.
I mean, that's rural, man. My dad was the only doctor around that little area. Creole, Louisiana, little tiny unincorporated area. And sometimes he would have to go and see his patients in one of those hero canoe type boats, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it was rural. And back in those days, everybody didn't have to speak English to get along back there. No, he didn't have to. But anyway, that's my roots, and many travels and everything. We ended up all around the country, and then in Southern California. My dad's started. Well, see, there were nine of us, Richard. There were nine of us.
Mm-hmm.
But my thing was, I really wanted to spend time alone with my dad, which was hard to do with his work as a doctor. And he was a kind of old-fashioned doctor. He would make house calls and all that. I mean, at like 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning and stuff. So then with nine kids, I always couldn't get in enough time with my dad like I love. But thank God, he would always be playing in his spare time at night. He would go in his little office room area, and he would play all of his Count Basie, Duke Ellington, Benny Goodman, Louis Armstrong, George Gershwin, all that kind of great music. And that was how I could spend time with my dad. And I'd go and listen to that with him because I actually liked it. I had an ear for it. I just liked it right off the bat. You know, no one had to make me like it. So that's my real, as far as melody, what I draw on, Richard, in my life, melody, style of improvisation, even when I'm playing blues and I worked with Albert King for a while, you know, and, you know, I hung out with him a little bit in Memphis, and a lot of the guys were, used to be accessible back in the day. You know, we used to kind of talk a little bit, and so I have that ingrained in me. But going back before that, I have an unusual thing. See, I was a jazz trombone player for a while, and so my melodic process is kind of unusual, how I come up with solos and stuff. It just, I feel like I'm a half guitar player and half trombone player every time I take a solo. You know, it's just kind of strange, but I like to play hard. When I'm taking a solo, I consider when I'm soloing, I'm writing a composition at the same time.
Okay.
Well, I like to think that you could take a section of any of my solos and make a song from it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that process of songwriting.
Yeah. Okay, Richard.
Now, when you sit down to start writing a song, what do you do that allows you to tap into the muse?
Well, music. Let me think. Well, how do I describe, explain it? There's different ways I approach it. I would say, okay, you remember my song. It's thank God it's kept me alive for a while. You know, I mean, since Hurricane Katrina. My song, New Car Smell.
Okay.
That song, you got that new car smell, baby, but I found out you've been around the block. You didn't get that many miles on you by sitting on the lot. Anyway, that song, for instance, it just come out of nowhere. I happen to be watching an indie film, right? I like to watch independent films. You know, I'm a real film buff. And we were watching a film, and this lady who was blind got in the car, which had been completely rebuilt and everything, right? And she goes, takes a big whiff, right? Goes, ooh, it's got that new car smell. And I took out my little piece of paper that I keep in my back pocket in my pen, wrote it down, and wrote the song that night. It inspired me to write, you know, New Car Smell. And it was related to smell and a car. And I said, well, I'll write something about, not to get anybody mad with the Me Too people, but everybody thought it was funny, you know. New car smell. I made it like a woman, like you know, you got that new car smell, but I found out you've been around the block, you know. So I got inspired just by hearing that title, those words. I said, well, you know, I can make a song out of that, and it'll be unique, and everybody will laugh. which it did. That's one way. And then sometime I will just think something sad. You know, there has to be something sad. So I'll just think, what's sad? Memories, you know, memories. You know, all of us who have lived a while, Mr. Richard, you know, we've all loved and lost at some point, you know. And so that is something we can draw on. So I thought about, okay. And I was in the supermarket. I came out of the men's room at the Robert's here in New Orleans, which is a popular chain. And I walked out of there, and I said, man, I got about a half hour to kill. What am I going to do? Hey, I'll write a song. So I was standing there, and I just thought, memories. And I started thinking, man, I've got some memories, don't I, Jeff? I've got some sad memories. You remember that woman that you know, maybe you weren't the best, you didn't treat the right, the best way that you knew you could have, and how that haunted you for years, and you had these sad memories, and, you know, you see an old couple holding hands, that should have been me and you, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just make that into a song. In fact, I'll be honest with you, I hope people listen to Memories, because when I listen to that verse, I wrote it, and I actually cry my own song. I actually cry when I hear that, because it's true. I see old couple holding hands, and that should have been me and you, but it wasn't. So I just draw on life, Richard.
Okay. Well, that's where the best songs come from.
Yeah.
Now, you know, a lot of writers, you know, they start writing songs, and of course, you know, a song is never really written. It's always rewritten. You work on it, you try to get it right, but you got to get to a point where you say it's done and ready to be, go into production and record it and so on. What do you do to determine when a song is finished?
To be honest with you, I'm not being big-headed or nothing. I just write it, and that's it.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough. Now let's talk about that process of
the course, and I think, all right, how might I accentuate the music to bring out the melody more, you know, to make it more interesting to listen to, not just for me to listen to, right? I have to think about the public, and so I will that end of it, yes, but as far as lyrically and the melody, I just do it, and that's it.
Okay.
Thank God I can do that.
Now, having a song gives you something to say, and going into the studio creates the voice in which to say it, and creates the sound. What do you do when you go into the studio that allows you to capture your sound?
Well, like on this CD here, Richard, this one is completely different than the other ones. The approach is night and day. It has nothing to do with anything I ever recorded, except that I play some solos and I sing it, I think, relatively well. But I concentrated on this one to get my sound. I actually experimented with different musicians would know what I'm talking about, modulation effects.
Okay.
And I might set one way and set another. I would make my own. I don't like presets on these new modern things people sell. They're very nice, but I buy on this whole record, I used inexpensive copies of expensive effects. I mean, very inexpensive, but I would set one way, then I'd set another way, and I would mess with them until I got my own sound on the background, usually like, you know, chords and a rhythm, you know, On a few songs, I really have some sounds on there that I'm very happy with. But as far as my solos, I will stay pretty much a little bit of overdrive, never too much. I don't like too much distortion effects. Now, if I were doing a song that was supposed to have that in it to make the song, like if I were doing a song about a, hey, baby, let's go back to 1966, you know, and then I'll make an effect, you know, like an old Yardbirds, you know, distortion or something like that to go with that. But usually I don't want anything to cover up my guitar tone or my guitar, how I pick or how I finger or how I use the whammy bar or whatever. I don't want that so overdriven or distorted, you know, that it's in the way of the actual purity of the notes I'm playing on a solo. But everything else, I'll experiment now. I didn't used to, but now I will run different effects into each other and make my own sound now. And you will hear it on this particular record. You will really hear it.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about what's happening in the industry. Now, you're in New Orleans. That's a music town. You know, there's a lot of music going on. There's a lot of venues. You know, and I know it's tough to make a living even in New Orleans because, the venues are not paying what they used to. What are some of the challenges you're having right now as you are dealing with COVID and going back to live music as some venues are opening up? What are some of the things you're dealing with there?
Well, what I have dealt with since they opened up until today, which happens, or until, until
the hurricane.
Hurricane Ida, which was yesterday, the 29th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, by the way. Until then, I would say, okay, after I clarified that, the challenges would be just to get a gig at first, because so many people are trying to get back in at the same time.
Right.
Because a lot of people hadn't played in a while. But thank God, I have a niche. I shower every day, but I mean, I
okay.
have a niche. A niche. You can give me the worst hours. Give me an early shift, please. Give me an early shift so I can show off. So I can get people in that place and make you money when nobody else can make money during them early hours. Let me have it. Let me have it. Then I have the rest of the day to go home and, work on music or work on my original music or, something of that sort. I have I am known for being able to do those early or the hard shifts where it's hard to get people in. They give me those because they know I can do it. I never get the early, 9 to 12, 9 p.m. Never, ever. Rarely. They say, well, Jeff Chass can get people in there for the next band. Nobody else can do that because, I have the experience of talking to people, when I was very, very young, Richard, when I first went on the road in 1968, 69, I was like 17 years old. And the band leader, he was a real hard-boiled guy. He wasn't that old. He was maybe 20, 26. He was from Boston, African-American guy. Very extremely hard worker. He was friends with James Brown, if that tells you anything.
Yeah.
Boy, did he drive me. Oh my God. And I signed on as a trombone player right out of high school. He'd been watching me for a year first though. He was from Boston, but he kind of watched me where I was at high school in California, because I always did gigs with the real old guys in their 20s, you know, the real old guys. So he would watch me, and then he got me right out of high school. He said, look, I'm putting a band together, and I need some horns, so let's go, you know. I'll ask your dad if you can go. You know, he liked my dad, so. And so I went. And then about two months into the gig, guess what happened?
What happened?
The guitar player, who, he was maybe a year older than me. I was 17, he was 18 maybe. And he heard that his girlfriend back home in San Bernardino off Route 66, he heard somebody else was talking to her. So he just dropped the gig and left. But he happened to be the second tenor, you know, singer. So the leader of the band, his name was Billy Hopkins, and the name of the band was Billy and the Good Guys. And we had quite a history. We did a lot of things. But anyway, he said, Jeff, you're the next singer. I said, wait a minute, man. I'm a trombone player. You know what he said? He said, you want to go home? He said, you want to go home? Just like that. No playing games. And I'm just barely out of high school. He said, you want to go home? I said, no. So he handed me three 45 singles. He handed me Proud Mary. I didn't have a choice. Do what you got to do. He handed me Proud Mary and Slip Away by Clarence Carter.
Okay.
And Too Hard to Handle by Otis. And he said, you can do it. He said, don't worry about it. You can do it. What you can't do, I'll show you. He said, you can do it, or I wouldn't ask you, or I wouldn't tell you. So, you know, you do what you got to do, Richard. You have to improvise in life. You have to improvise in life. But if you don't think you can do that, well, stay home, you know.
Yep.
Well, stay home.
I agree. Well, you know, I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking with us.
You are such a great inspiration to a lot of people. You're unselfish. You give people time. And I greatly appreciate you. And
it's my pleasure.
Yes.
Well, you know, if I ever get down to New Orleans, I'm definitely coming and checking you out wherever you're at, you know?
Please do. And this one movie that I'm in that is coming out, if it's okay if I talk
about
it.
Sure, go right ahead.
The main name is an actor named Emilio Rivera, who is one of the stars of that offshoot of Sons of Katrina show.
Okay.
Mayans MC. Emilio is one of the stars of that. And I have a pretty, really good part in this film. In fact, at the end of the credits, it says, and introducing Jeff Chast. But it's not out yet. They're doing, you know, business and all kinds of different things. So I'm just waiting on that. But I thought I would just plug that for a second.
Sure. Well, what is it about?
It's a post-apocalyptic biker movie. It's about a Nevada Valley, and some apocalyptic thing had happened. They're not clear in the movie, which I'm kind of glad it's left open. I think probably a war. And the valley, which was dependent upon the central government to send them supplies and everything, you know, to keep them alive, they had stopped doing it. So it started to become a dog-eat-dog thing. And there are two main motorcycle clans, as they call them, who represent different parts of the valley. And they fight it out different ways. And my part is I am a hidden-out, clandestine, hidden-out in the desert radio announcer, you know, hermit, on the edge of being nuts, announcing to the valley everything that's going on, you know, between the two fights, the two gangs struggling for power and blah, 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 blah. But it's interesting.
Okay. Well, again, thank you for coming on the show, and we're going to give everyone out there a double shot from your new release. And you guys are going to love this. Just turn it up loud. Screw the neighbors. We're going to have some fun.
Okay, Richard. Thank you so much.
We'll be right back. places we used to go.
Whether you're an independent artist looking to take their career to the next level, or you're a fan that just loves to discover new artists and new original music, Making a Scene has exactly what you're looking for. For the indie artist, we have articles on music business, gear reviews, recording techniques, and interviews with industry professionals. For the fan, we introduce you to new artists every day with our in-depth artist interviews and insightful CD reviews. Nobody gives you more. Making a Scene truly is the number one resource for the indie artist and the fans that love them. Go to makingascene.org and become part of the indie revolution.
Shout now, honey!